Hi, podcast peeps. Listen, this is a business meeting, business chat, Q&A I had with Callum Birch. Basically, Callum's starting out with a digital marketing agency and he wanted to speak to me as part of his persona group. And I think this is really critical whenever people start out in business, is actually speak and, you know, reach out to your persona group and get an indication of what's going to work for them. So this was him doing that to me, and I was more than happy to offer my advice, offer my opinion in terms of his Q&As. So listen, guys, I hope you get some real value out of this. And if you do, if you like it, please rate, review, and subscribe. And I can't wait to catch up with you soon. No, I've got loads of stuff to do, to be honest, mate. So it's it's fine. So how you been?
Yeah, I've been all right, thanks.
Yeah. What's how's this sort of business side going?
Yeah, it's going to go. I've just been, since the last story, I've just been working on...
I think I've got the wrong coffee, by the way. I don't know if anyone's got sugar.
I think I've got sugar.
Can I swap?
If you want...
Yeah, I've got that.
Cheers. They're both filming.
Okay, thanks, mate.
Cheers. Yeah, so I've just been doing the projects the clients have already got, putting together a proof portfolio with like case studies and testimonials and stuff.
Yeah.
So I can leverage them to get more new clients.
Yeah, of course. How's it going with the projects you're working on in terms of, what's your sort of remit for them at the moment?
So one of them is, I'm helping a client who was using AdWords to drive traffic to his like online store.
So, and you're helping him with that?
Yeah, so just helping him like lower the cost of the traffic and eventually and make more conversions on his website.
Yeah. And how's that going?
Yeah, it's going well. Yeah.
Is it hard to get that cost per conversion down?
Yeah. The tricky thing actually to start with was getting foundations right, because he hadn't even got conversion tracking set up.
Yeah.
And there were lots of, like, some of the basics weren't quite right. So we've had conversion tracking set up for about a week now.
Yeah.
Just waiting for data to come through to see how expensive it is for
me. Early days, isn't it?
Exactly.
Early days.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So have you found that you've had a sort of like create like a structure, like an almost like a process to follow for your clients in terms of like, we need to make sure we've got this foundation right first, and then you just said like talking about the tracking and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, because I'm doing different types of projects at the moment, it's been difficult to set like a solid process, but I've known from the start that I've wanted to like start off strategically and make sure that what the client wants me to do fits in with their business goals as a whole.
Yeah.
So I did that with that client.
And how have you learned that? Because again, for those who haven't met you before, we did a previous podcast session, didn't we, where we talked about you and about what, you know, your history of coming from a more of a medical background into this.
Yeah.
So I won't repeat all that, but anyone who hasn't seen it, definitely check out. I can't remember which podcast it is, but it's one of the early ones, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So it's definitely worth checking out because it's an interesting background that you're coming from. But so you're having to learn a whole new skill set, aren't you?
Pretty much, yeah.
So how have you gone about doing that? Self-learning?
I've done some courses,
but
I guess the strategic approach came from just studying the people that are doing it really well.
Yeah.
There's a guy called Perry Marshall, who's probably considered the best guy in AdWords in the world.
Oh, wow.
So I've just studied him quite a lot. And some of the people that he's worked with, a guy called Donovan Kovar. And then I noticed that a pattern that they all go in at a strategic level and make sure that whatever the project is fits with the business first.
Yeah.
Rather than going... There's a saying in, I think it's from the book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People.
Right. You know that? Yeah.
I think he says something like, if you place the ladder against the wrong wall, then every step you take is just a step gets you to the wrong place faster.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So that kind of, I guess my philosophy is that it's most important to choose the right wall to lean against first rather than
100%.
Planning straight ahead and getting the wrong result.
100%, awesome. So, you reached out to me and said, Ben, can I ask you some questions, didn't you?
Yeah.
So I said, let's let's vlog it, let's podcast it, let's video it, get it on, you know, YouTube, whatever. Because, you know what, it's one of those, I've lots of, you know, you always have those really good chats with people. You think, oh man, you know, I wish I could sort of share that with with somebody, because you do sometimes have really good conversations. I thought, you know what, let's just do it. It might work, it might not work, I don't know, but
sure.
Far away.
Here we go.
Yeah,
well, I'll give you the background first, so you know why I want to ask the questions. So basically, I've been working in a freelancer role where I've just been doing whatever projects I can to get experience and results for clients. But what I want to be doing at the same time is developing a particular service, like a core service offering, that I can go out and sell basically to the right people. And so I've basically got a list of possible service ideas. And then before I go all in on one of them, I want to talk to some people that I'd be working with, and just see what gets me feelings and see how they feel about it.
No, perfect.
It's actually valuable or not.
Definitely.
So the first idea that I'm testing is lead generation for service businesses. And so I just wanted to pick your brain as a financial service business owner.
With services, definitely. Can I just say, actually, and this is relevant for anyone who's starting out in business, I think what you're doing is absolutely bang on the money in terms of speaking to persona groups.
Right.
So identifying, because this is basically what you're doing, you're saying, right, this is what I think I want to do. I've got an idea of what it's going to look like, and we're going to hear about that in a minute. But before I go and create what I'm going to go and create, and then go, ta-da! And then those people go, that's not really quite what we want.
Yeah.
It's almost too late and you wasted a lot of time.
Yeah.
So what you're doing now is by speaking to the persona groups, and hopefully there'll be others other than just me, get a feeling for, is this something that's right? And then you can move forward. And I think that's absolutely the right approach for that. And that's the approach I'm taking with the tech startup that I'm doing. You know, we've done, every time we've done something, we've gone and speaking to, we've got a little persona group, a little core group of people that are very generous and very kind in offering their insights and advice.
Right.
And we go and speak to them, say, look, we've got to this point, what do you think? Are we on the right track? Yeah, that's really good, or no, that needs work, or not. And each stage you get validation, until you go, right, here we go, this is our MVP, a minimum viable product. This is everything that we've built up to. What do you think now? Because very much like you're doing now is you're verbally describing it, and that's what we've done, and we are doing. We're soon going to have an MVP, a minimum viable product, to go, right, you know all that chatting we've been doing over God knows how many years?
Yeah.
Have a look at something.
Yes.
So I would suggest that's definitely the right approach that you would be taking.
Okay, good.
Before we even get into any meat of what it is. So I just want to say well done for doing this.
Thank you.
I think it's brilliant.
That's good to hear you.
Yeah. Because even if my feedback is, no, that's not very good, or it won't work, at least it doesn't, and I'm not saying I know the answers, because you might get somebody else who says it's really good.
Yeah.
But if there's a few people who say no, 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 then at least it saves you time.
Gotcha.
You know, and energy and money, and you can go, okay, well, maybe that's not quite right, but maybe if we tweak it and go that way, it might be what's needed, so.
It probably allows me to be a bit more rational about it, doesn't it? Because I can think, well, it's not going to work, or I need to change this for it to maybe work.
Definitely.
I can just move on to the next idea.
Yeah,
rather
definitely.
Than spending a year like going all in the rivers and no one actually wants this fucking thing.
Yeah, disaster.
Yeah, exactly.
No, definitely. So,
thank you.
So sorry, I just sort of completely interrupted your flow.
No, it's fine. I don't have a flow anyway. So,
so yeah, so go for it. What's so something for the service industries, lead generation, how's that going to sort of work? How do you see that?
Yeah, so my hypothesis at least is, businesses that might want somebody to help them generate leads are those that have a high turnover of clients, but their client lifetime value is quite high, so their service prices are quite high. So the idea is potentially to just supplement their current client acquisition channels.
Yeah.
And just say, look, I'll come in, I'll work independently if you want to. I'll generate X amount of leads for you each month, qualify them via email if need to be, so you don't have to deal with time wasters. That's it in a nutshell.
Okay, brilliant.
What do you think about that?
I mean, fundamentally, I think any service industry would love more business and more leads, you know, without a doubt. I think wanting more business is a no-brainer. Obviously, as a business, you've got to make sure your team can manage that volume.
Right.
Because one thing in our industry, you know, it's quite labour intensive in terms of the process. There's a lot of regulatory work that's required. I think not a lot of people realise how much man hours goes into it.
Yeah.
But aside from that, for the prospecting side, again, that's very labour intensive. And it's funny, we were just talking about it yesterday, how, you know, phoning prospects up and calling them and seeing if they're, you know, they're ready to move forward or not, as the case might be. Again, that's labour intensive. It takes a lot of time. And I think to be able to get to the point where we can have qualified leads of people wanting to do something now,
right,
would be very good, because you get basically you get people at different points of the spectrum in terms of the mortgage world, in terms of or even the buying the house world.
Yeah.
You know, you get they're initially thinking about it, and they're initially maybe sort of planning it or dreaming about it. And they might start doing some research about, oh, can I do this? Can I not do this? How much is that going to cost? Where should I buy? How much is a mortgage going to cost? So there's a lot of researching phase. And that might be both for a residential purchase and an investment purchase. I'm thinking about getting a holiday let mortgage because I'm thinking about buying a holiday let because I went to a lovely place in Devon and we want to maybe have a little bolt hole down there, but we can also rent. So there's some, you've got a lot of dreaming elements that go into it, and a lot of time can be taken into that, which is fine. You know, and to a certain extent, what we have is a lot of like almost ebooks or downloadable documents or guides that people can go into our website and download. So hopefully, they can do a lot of self education themselves.
Right.
But if we can almost get to the point when, you know, I'm starting to strategically think about, okay, how can we make our team efficient by stripping out that element of people who either say they want a call and actually they don't really want a call, and they're just being polite and they're too afraid to say no, please don't call me back. One of the big things, and anybody in sales will know this, is often it's very hard, unless you ask for it, to get a no.
Right.
So most people won't say to you, you know, somebody will say, oh, you know, do you need some help right now? No, right now. Oh, well, should I call you back in a week or a month? Yeah, call me back. And what they mean to say is, I'm not interested. But people don't say, I'm not interested. So I'm trying to teach my guys to say, look, you can, if you want my help, great. If you don't want my help, you can say, no, I'm not going to be offended.
Yeah.
But let's not waste each other's time. Because all that's going to happen is, I'm going to call you in a month's time. And we're going to play the same game of, I'm not ready right now. Let's call me back in another month, and it's just another month, and it's the same. It's like playing this ridiculous game because people are too either afraid or too polite to say no, thank you. I mean, how many times have you ever said, you know, you get a sales call and say, actually, I'm not interested. Please don't call me again, in a nice way.
Yeah,
it's hard to say that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unless the salesperson tells them or gives them permission to say, you can tell me you don't even have. I'm going to be okay with that.
That's such a good point.
Yeah.
I love that you're so proactive about taking responsibility for.
Well, it's just about, let's not play games. Yeah, it's like you either do want to do something or you don't, you know, and it's just black and white.
Yeah.
You know, let's not muck around, you know.
Nice.
And either's fine, you know, it genuinely is. But people don't get it. So, but fundamentally, if we can get, like, what we call hot leads, like people, right, I want to do something, I want to do it now, and I'm serious, and I'm not messing around. Bang, 100%, that'd be something that I'd be interested in, without a doubt.
Right.
And it all comes down to cost of the acquisition of the inquiry. That's the bottom line. Because obviously we, at the moment, we look at lots of different things. We look at things like, you know, regular Google traffic.
Yeah.
We do SEO stuff, and we do blogs, and we do videos, and we do social media stuff. We do, what else do we do? One thing we don't do well enough is email campaigns.
Right.
At all, we don't do that very well. And the genuine reason is not because we can't, it's because it's just my time. And that's the thing I get so frustrated about, because literally there's only so much I can physically do. But that's something we're looking at, just to share with you. And I know we're going off tangent slightly, but we get a new website, that's going to be coming out soon. After that phase, the website, we're going to be looking at creating some really cool infographics, which we spoke about because I shared with you that amazing story with Neil Patel.
Yeah, sweet.
And but it's really interesting because we had talked about this before, and it's one of those things that it just it's so easy for things not to happen or not to take action. But I think part of the problem was we had a website where we couldn't do certain things.
Right.
So we're doing a big job of moving away, and we're going to have much more flexibility to do more what we want to do.
Nice.
So what's your sort of thinking in terms of, like, you know, the lead generation? Is it going to be sort of like Google AdWord-driven lead generation, or how do you see it?
It depends on how the conversations go, I think, to some extent.
I guess it could be Facebook ads, couldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, what I think my approach would be was more to focus on the system of getting the leads and qualifying the leads rather than medium or the marketing channel that I'd use to bring them in.
Okay.
Because I guess that's different for every business.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it would be.
You know, some people might want to use offline types of marketing, which would be fine.
Yeah.
I guess as long as it was calling for some kind of action.
Yeah.
And so I would probably look to build some kind of system that fits into the business as it is already.
Yeah.
And help bring in either bring in more leads or qualify the leads that are coming in already.
Yeah.
Depending on, I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you think about that one?
That's interesting. Yeah. Again, you know, probably both would work for us right now in terms of, you know, having an ape person. I think that's something buzzing our door. Let me just check it.
Yeah, sure.
Sorry. I did that little clap because it helps with the sound. So that was quite sad. Just one of our clients, his dad's just got brain cancer, he's only got 18 months left. So yeah, it's just asking some questions about what's gonna happen and stuff like that. But it stands me when people don't think like things like life insurance or critical illness cover is important. Because it just makes such an impact. Exact words were. Oh, I thought it never happened to us. My dad's never been ill all his life.
Oh, God.
So, my aunt last year died of something similar to like brain cancer.
Right.
So.
Unexpected.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, you must have seen a bit of that when you were sort of doing radiography, scanning people.
Yeah, I did head scan and things. So yeah, it was almost the norm. It felt like the norm, but.
Yeah, I think the thing is, working the medical side, you're sort of dealing with death all the time, aren't you?
Yeah.
I don't think people who are not in that world realise that, you know, suddenly, you know, literally, you almost must become almost immune to it.
Yeah, to some extent.
Well, you have to be, I guess. You have to be.
Yeah.
Because you know, we've got the reason I sort of know this is we've got a friend who's a nurse.
Right.
And she's like, you know, she used to work in the, or she does work in the. What's that special unit? They're really ill, basically.
I'm not sure.
But it's just another world, isn't it? Working on that medical side.
It is, absolutely.
It's real, isn't it?
It's very different, yeah.
Very real. Whereas this is a bit of.
Yeah.
It's fun, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, let's not get like down and like, depressed. Where were we at? We were talking about the different types of requirements, whether it's a filtering, internal filtering of leads. So let's just bring it back. So you're thinking of basically helping service industries generate inquiries and leads. I think the first question I'd have is how would you go about doing that?
Don't know yet, to be honest. I'm kind of interested to see how the different types of businesses that may be interested work.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, to see how you currently do it.
Yeah.
One way other businesses do it is they'll use advertising to generate awareness.
Yeah.
And then have some form of kind of some way of taking them from awareness to lead, express some kind of interest. And then you might, for example, nurture them into a warm and hot lead via email marketing. Could be by phone. Depends on what the company wants to do and how they normally approach it.
It's interesting. There was a telemarketing company sort of contacted me yesterday, actually, right. Based in Exeter. So, okay. Again, it's not something I've really explored.
Right.
But
what, telemarketing?
Part of me struggles to see how a company who's not in our world can really get it, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And they will say they can, and they will say all this stuff to, you know, really impress you.
Yeah, makes sense.
But I've had too many experiences of, for example, the consultants who are supposedly the experts, and actually what I found is they're very good at selling themselves.
Right.
They're not very good at actually delivering. And there's a big difference there. It's like a lot of these social media companies that I see, or ones that are, you know, springing up left, right, and centre. It's the same point. They're very good at selling themselves to say they can do this, this, and this, and this. You know, and every business owner wants that golden bullet. You know, they want that quick win. They want that. Oh, if I get him, he's going to help me.
Doesn't exist.
Get there. It does not exist at all. But there is that desire, though. There's that hug. There's that, you know, especially when you start an act, like, oh, you know, how can I get more business? How can I? Oh, you're going to bring me more business? Oh, wow! And you know, you can do this. Wow! Yeah. You know, it's that sell. And there's a lot of people out there who just sell themselves to. And actually, their delivery isn't probably as good as it should be.
That's to my disadvantage in some respects, because it's a very, as an industry, marketing is considered quite scammy, isn't it? Because there's a lot of people doing that. It's a shame, because...
Yeah. No, and there's a huge number of people doing it. It was, there's just tons of people doing it. And it's a really competitive market, massively competitive market. My feeling, if I'm honest with you, is... I feel... Unless I know the person, unless I'm happy to take a punt on them, I want to see what they're doing themselves. In terms of, are you marketing yourself? How are you, what's your social media profile like? How are you smashing it? Because surely you've got to be a practitioner yourself before you can go and say, I'm good at it. Look what I've done, what I've built, now come on board.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But but for you, when you're starting out, that's just an impossibility. You know, well, I mean, you can build up your own sort of marketing yourself in conjunction with trying to get business.
Yeah, exactly.
But you're not going to get up there overnight.
No.
And that's the challenge for, I think, any business starting out. And I think all you can do is try and sell yourself.
Yeah. Improve myself in different ways, potentially, to start with.
Yeah, yeah, and build that honesty or relationship. Or maybe if we break it down into real, you know, hard monetary terms, maybe take a punt on a different business model for you.
Right.
And what maybe, I don't know if you've thought about, you know, things like revenue share, you know, shares and splits, things like that. So rather than, oh, Mr. Client, you've got to spend X amount with me. I'll promise to get this amount of leads, and then it doesn't happen. Which I'm sure a lot of people do. Whether it's possible to go, hey, listen, I've got, you know, I've got, you know, I'm starting out. But I know I'm good. You like me, I like you. Let's do, you know, you'll take a punt on me, I'll take a punt on you, and maybe we'll do like a revenue split on new inquiries and new leads. That's a lower risk for a business owner.
Interesting. Okay.
It's almost a win-win. It's a lot more...
So you're talking about, for instance, if I went into the business and generated the 100 leads, 10 of them became clients, and those 10 clients generated X amount of revenue, and then splitting some percentage of revenue.
Exactly. Because I think fundamentally, if you're confident that you can get the leads...
If I don't want to get paid, don't deserve it.
So well, in a way, you don't deserve it. It's an interesting one, because a lot of people out there go, well, I'm working for nothing. Well, you're selling yourself on the fact that you're going to get leads.
Exactly.
If you're not prepared to stand up to the plate and go, you know what, I'll live and breathe and die if I either get leads or don't leads, rather than I'll just take the money, it doesn't work out, see you later, I'm going off to the next client and selling my service to him, you know, being all, you know, showy off in, and then that doesn't work and go to something else. You know,
That's interesting.
It's
my shoulder and wrist rather than asking the client's shoulder and wrist, I suppose, in a sense.
And I think to start out, that might be a better approach. This is a gut feeling, this is just something I'm feeling off the top of my head, because I know how I would feel is, you know, do I want to... I think the reality is, as a business owner, I'm going to be looking at you going, right, how do I know you're going to get me leads? How do I, you know, how do I know anything?
Prove it.
Once you can prove it, and once you can build your own status in terms of, you know, your reputation, your own marketing of yourself.
Yeah.
Look how many people I've got following me. Look how many, you know, you're literally fighting off the inquiries. Then things change.
Right.
You know, or you might still choose to do a profit share because suddenly, actually, that is still more profitable than charging it. Or maybe it's a mixture.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's not. I don't know. You know, that's something that could evolve. And I think, to some extent, I think there's not too much point thinking that far ahead.
No.
I think the key is to establish yourself as the expert, and to do that, you need to prove it and really market yourself.
Okay, interesting. Generating it for myself.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it.
Yeah, makes sense, doesn't it? Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. It's something I've thought a lot about, actually, and it's this proving myself goes across any service that I offer, I think, because I'm so early on in my career, but. It's super interesting to hear that's an objection that comes into your head as a potential client if we were talking about that.
Yeah. And even for a company, even, you know, a social media marketing company or a marketing company, period, or whatever, digital marketing company, if they were to approach me and they said, oh, we can guarantee you this, this, and this, but it's going to cost you this much upfront and this much on a monthly basis.
Yeah.
I still would be hesitant right now, if I'm honest with you, because I just...
Interesting.
Because, to some extent, because it's a new relationship as well, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe once that relationship's been established, and I've got confidence in them, then maybe the model could then change.
Right, okay. Yeah, that
makes
sense.
To some extent, it wouldn't even matter if it was something new or somebody who's, you know, a big company. It's like, okay, we'll prove it.
But if you'd sort of seen this company getting results for other people over a period of time, and you got to know them better as a person.
Yeah, but even if they were saying, oh, look at our testimonials, I don't believe all that. I don't fall for it.
Interesting.
I know it helps build credibility in a lot of... I think it helps... I'm sure it helps business to B2B, but I think it certainly helps probably more in B2C.
Okay.
What's
missing for you from a testimonial or a case study or something like that?
I think it's simple. My experience with those people, my experience with that company, my experience on their deliverability to my business.
Sure.
So until they can prove it, I'm not going to feel comfortable, because I know my business better than anybody. So for them just to give me all this bullshit, excuse my language, my wife keeps telling me, you've got to stop swearing. And then it's really annoying because I do swear, like, at work.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not swearing all the time, but she just says, oh, baby, da, 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 da. And I'm like, well, it's just the way I am. So I'm trying to a bit more. But sometimes you need to say it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I want to be myself.
Sure.
So there you go, bullshit.
Yeah. That's a lot of it around.
There's a huge amount of it around. And for me, I want to be a practitioner of marketing my business. You know, I want to, I don't want to just outsource it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because I don't feel anyone can do it as well as I can. I think people could help me.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think people could definitely help me, whether it's practical things or skilled things or whatever. There's a lot of help I need. And just to share with you, I'm moving my mindset in terms of, yes, we are a financial services business and I'm on the side building a tech business, but actually we are a marketing business ourselves, because we've got to And actually, every business is a marketing business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it doesn't matter if you're, you know, we're talking about service industry, whether you're a solicitor, mm. you know, whether you're an accountant, you are a marketing business.
Mm.
You might just happen to be doing that as a job.
Yeah.
Fundamentally, you've got to market yourself to be able to go and get those clients in.
One.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Thanks, mate.
You said one sugar, didn't you?
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
Just milk?
Just coffee with milk.
So,
yeah, so true.
I've just switched my mindset in terms of, okay, I've got to learn this, and this is me learning.
So how's that changed? How's that changed things for you so far? Is that curious?
That's way too early.
Okay.
Way too early to have any impact, you mean?
Well, is it affecting your decision making? I guess it takes time to affect your like results and things, but are you doing things differently than you were? Or?
Definitely doing things differently, because I think I'm just, you know, my mindset in terms of the marketing requirements is just, it's changed hugely. I think my mindset's changed. I mean, I was always marketing and writing blogs, you know, and, you know, thinking about new landing pages for the website and tweaks on SEO and stuff like that. A little bit on the emails. So I've always been quite proactive and thinking about the digital side of marketing, always.
Right.
But I think for me, it was last year, I suddenly clicked in terms of the social media, more digital media marketing was actually, this is huge, and
right.
I need to, you know, get on this properly to, you know, it's a free platform. You know, I can have my own TV show. You know, I don't need to. It's funny, years ago, I thought, I wonder if you could do like a Jamie Oliver esque mortgage broker, like the naked mortgage broker TV show, you know?
Great.
I mean, it's not quite as sexy, is it? It's like cooking nice food and, like, you know, whereas you're like on the phone and on the computer, it's like, you know, unless you can make it some sort of
masses.
Yeah, unless you made it some sort of like a city boiler room type, you know, imagery and things like that. But the reality is, our industry is full of. It's a cottage industry. It's full of one-man bands, two-man bands, small companies, all over the country. So, you know, it's, you know, and of course there's the odd big company, but it's a cottage industry.
Right.
So it is very much like this, up and down the country.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Why do you think that is?
It's a big answer.
To expand the entire market, I know, but.
Well. Why is it? I could tell you, and it'll take me a long time.
Okay.
I'll break it down in a bite-sized chunk. Fundamentally, it's a very challenging business to grow.
Okay.
It's very localized. It's very fragmented.
Okay.
And there's lots of different reasons for that, but if you just look at the demographics of it, it's all sort of 40 plus age group, a lot of men.
Right.
But fundamentally, it's a very challenging industry to grow.
Right.
We're effectively, in a way, we're competing with, you know, the banks.
Right.
And I know, in a way, we're not anymore, but we are. You know, what I mean by that is, you know, something like 70% of all mortgages are now done through mortgage brokers.
Really. Right.
And that shift, if I'm honest, isn't anything to do with how good we are as brokers.
Yeah.
It's because, you know, we might like to think that. We might like to think that we're special and everyone likes to use a mortgage broker because then we're independent and independent's really cool and you're going to get independent advice and why would you go to a bank because they're only going to offer their products when you speak to somebody like us and you can speak to all the banks. You know what, we would love, and a lot of people probably delude themselves that that's why. But the consumer doesn't give a shit about that, if I'm honest. Some do, you know, some, but I think a lot of consumers don't understand that independent perspective. So the reason why the market shifted was because the banks have allowed it to shift fundamentally. And what I mean by that is the banks are closing branches.
Right.
The banks are reducing the number of mortgage advisors in areas.
Right.
You know, they're literally just chopping them back, you know, left, right, centre. I think there's like one or two mortgage advisors in the whole of Cornwall for nationwide. You know, before they probably have someone in every single branch.
Really?
So they're just chopping, and they're centralising everything.
Okay.
So they're centralising it. So, you know, they'll have mortgage advisors, you know, in a call centre in Birmingham or wherever, or Manchester, for the bank. And so it's meant basically that's happened in conjunction with regulatory changes, has meant the banks have also wanted to effectively outsource the compliance and the regulatory work to our distribution channel.
Okay.
And the mortgage broker's world being the distribution channel.
Okay.
So effectively, you know, the banks have always had us as a big distribution channel for them to turn the tap on or turn the tap off in terms of getting business.
Wow.
So if they just, you know, they could just say, hey, exclusive deal with the mortgage brokers, as soon as we, you know, and turn that tap on, or we've got too much business, turn the tap off and we'll just change the rates. So they've got a big distribution channel with mortgage brokers. So in a way, why would they want to have the overhead of a mortgage advisor in a branch and a branch cost?
Yeah.
Honestly, they want to do mortgage business, they could just open it up to the mortgage brokers, which is what they're doing.
Wow. Okay.
And a lot of the regulatory burden is now moving on to us as advisors, and also us in terms of the way we put a case together. We call it packaging.
Okay. Yeah.
So when we send it to a lender, it's nice and easy for them to manage. They're then almost like the factory processing it.
So they're controlling that, as to what they want in the package.
Yeah, yeah, but we know what they want, so we have to get everything together. So they're not chasing the clients with documentation and stuff like that. You know, it's we're getting everything together, putting in a nice little bundle, and again, and then they just basically give money.
Wow.
So we're sort of doing all the groundwork and all the hard work. And you know what? That's a really smart move for the banks.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Completely outsourcing it, effectively. Mm. Still obviously wanting to offer their clients, you know, a direct route to still have a relationship with them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But effectively, that is the reason why the broker market has gone up to 70%. It's not because we're clever.
No, that's
because the banks...
Because they've allowed you to.
Have allowed us to.
Well, asked you to, essentially.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, you know, we do have a powerful, you know, strength in numbers in terms of the amount of volume of business that we do. So it's important for them to keep the broker community on board. But the reality is the broker community is massively fragmented because it's lots of little one-man bands. There's no like big hitters, you know, that can say, right, come on guys, you know, you need to be doing this differently.
Presumably the banks are the big hitters before, but
I mean, there are these what's called mortgage clubs, or I'm getting a bit technical now, so I apologise for anyone who's listening and just switching off. It does get a little bit dull, I know. Okay, so there are these elements of mortgage, what's called a mortgage club, or my brain's just fried. Another tier above us.
Right.
So there could be, which basically is the regulation and things like that. So they have, what are they called? They're called networks. Yeah, brain's gone. So they're called like networks. So mortgage brokers could be a member of a network, and then you've got, I don't know, 100,000 mortgage brokers under one network. So that network then has a bit of clout.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But the reason often that mortgage brokers join a network is because they don't want to have the regulatory burden themselves. So they're not directly accountable to the FCA.
Right, okay.
Which again, I think is a bit of...
So the network's accountable as a whole?
Yes. Right. Yeah. But again, you know, for me, I've always thought it's much more sensible and practical to be directly authorised, because you've got much greater control and you haven't got somebody sort of telling you what to do. I mean, you've still got the regulator to tell you what to do.
Yeah.
But I think running a business, you should be dealing with the regulator directly. Have the confidence I think a lot of them are scared of the regulator.
Right. It's interesting. Because that's control again, a bit like the marketing.
Yes.
You control your marketing, you control the way your business operates.
Yes, exactly.
Very entrepreneurial.
But again, the reality is a lot of these mortgage brokers up and down the country, and again, it, like I said, it's very small one-man bands, that's why I call it a cottage industry. They don't want to worry about... They're practitioners, they're not worrying about growing a business.
Right.
You know, or I mean, maybe a few of them are, but they often are just stuck doing the grind, you know. Mm. And that's again one of the reasons why it's hard to grow, because you know there isn't the enough income for companies to grow unless they really invest in the companies.
Right.
And often people don't invest; they're quite happy just to take the money, have a nice lifestyle. And for me, I've basically invested everything back into the business.
Right.
I mean, I'd be a lot wealthier right now if I didn't do everything I'm doing, if I just did my day job and didn't employ lots of people.
Right.
You know, if it was just me and one girl, I'd be a lot wealthier right now.
But you think in the long term it'll be better this way?
Yeah, definitely. Nice. Definitely. So I'm taking a hit short term for the long term win. Mm-hmm. Because I really want to create, you know, a successful, big mortgage brokerage.
Nice.
With the ambition of being nationwide.
So you franchise?
I don't know. I'm working out the model at the moment. It's something I've been talking about on my vlogs, and I'm just working out the model how I'm going to look at it. So this
it must be difficult if there's no other, like, there's no examples to follow, if there's a lot of fragmentation.
Yeah, well, the only model that exists at the moment is quite a weak, poor model.
Right.
And it's quite simply you either have advisors who are employed.
Yeah.
And most firms don't do this. There are big players who have employed advisors, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But most mortgage brokers, most independent mortgage brokers up in the country, any other advisor working in that practice will be self-employed usually.
Right, okay.
So you've got two models. You either got the model where you employ them, but you take in a more of a risk in terms of you've got to make sure that you feed them to get the business in, to make sure it pays for itself.
Yep.
If you can guarantee that enough business comes in, it's much more profitable.
Right.
Much more profitable. But a lot of firms, so that's that model. Or the other model is just to have other self-employed advisors, and basically they feed themselves.
And so you just ask them when the work comes in?
Well, basically they work under your framework. Okay. And there's like a commission split, so they, you know, they write X amount of business and the company takes this percentage and they take that percentage, because they're able to do the business under your regulatory framework and everything that you provide, the systems, the structures, the processes, the compliance, the administration, you know, you're providing the infrastructure for them to do their job.
Right.
So yeah. Hence they give you, you know, you split the income effectively.
Yeah.
So that's the common route. And what I've always thought about that is, and I'll go into that in detail because that's really important. I've often thought that the danger with that is effectively you've got an umbrella company, the company,
yeah,
and you've got lots of these self-employed people underneath it.
Yeah.
Often what happens is clients will get, it's almost like these individuals are running their own businesses under a business.
Yeah.
And the reality is, clients could get different experiences depending on who they see and different outcomes, because I can guarantee you this, these companies do not have the systems and structures and processes in place to control that advisory structure. They literally let them get on with it and do the odd file check and things like that, tick the right boxes, but there is a massive discrepancy in terms of, you know, outcome, services, quality of advice, quality of experience, real consistency. So that's always been a really obvious issue that I can see in the marketplace, but it's up and down the country, without a doubt. That, you know, it's literally, and that's what I mean, it's a lot of just individuals, one-man bands, you know, effectively either running their own business or running their own business within a business. It's it's a really
it's what I'm hearing
backwards industry.
It sounds like you want like a you want a business where the model has strong processes built around it and you can 100%. Fix the outcomes, you know, who's coming in and who's going on.
100%. Yeah, 100%. At the moment, our systems are literally head and shoulders above everyone else, period. Wow. You know, and I've got no doubt about that at all. You know, we've created almost like a factory production line.
Nice.
And it ensures consistency.
Yeah.
Issues, and there's also checking mechanisms throughout every element.
Right.
Throughout the process of an application. And different eyes are on an application,
okay.
Which is massively unique. The if you think about it, at the moment, most firms out there, if there's an issue with a case, there's usually an issue after the event.
Okay.
You know, it's almost like when the horse is bolted, and trying to shut the stable gate. Mm. It's too late then. Whereas we've got checking mechanisms throughout that process, and consistency. And you know, making sure we've got the same outcome. So it doesn't matter if somebody sees Bob, Peter, or Paul.
Yeah.
You're going to get the same results, same outcomes, same consistency. Mm. So it's almost trying to McDonaldize the process. I read something very interesting about how you know McDonald's works and things like that. And you know, if you look at Pizza Hut or Pizza Express, you go to any Pizza Hut or Pizza Express anywhere in the country, you get the same quality.
Yeah.
You know, Cafe Nero, you know, or yeah. You know, Starbucks.
Fascinating.
And that's the basically the model I'm trying to create. Now, don't get me wrong, it's not perfect, and any production line,
yeah,
you need to make it more efficient, better, work it,
of course,
all the rest of it. So,
you're trying to, is the goal to perfect the system before you take it somewhere else, or do you think that's a
well,
that'll happen together?
What's really just throwing a span in the mix right now is. Some of the lenders, just as a little snippet, okay, I've tried to strip out the inefficient workload for advisors.
Right.
And make them efficient, and, you know, it's all about making efficiencies. So one of those elements is trying to say, okay, guys, I want you to focus on doing what you do well, which is making relationships, talk to people, having those meetings. And one of those elements, submitting mortgage applications, is done by our administrative team.
Yeah.
Because why are you pressing buttons?
Yeah.
You know, is that making you money? No, it's not.
Yeah.
Is it making the business money? No, it's not. You're doing administrative duty, pressing buttons in.
Mm.
But basically, the lenders are saying, we don't like you doing that.
Wow, okay.
So it's really, really, really irritating.
Mm.
And yeah, this is interesting. So the mortgage lenders don't like us doing this, but the insurance companies are completely fine with it. So like the life insurance and critical insurance, they're fine with it. But for mortgages, they're not. So we're having to fit within their model.
Is this across lenders or just particular ones?
It's across all lenders.
Interesting.
Yeah, we're doing a bit of due diligence now to just to double check.
Right.
We know there's a few lenders that don't like it, but I suspect it's going to be all the lenders. And it's ridiculous.
How do they know? Do you have to like sign in or something?
Yeah, they're quite smart, if I'm honest with you.
Right.
Well, they're very smart.
Right.
And
still trying to control it by themselves.
Well, they are. And I guess they've got to have control mechanisms, which I get.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they don't know whether a mortgage broker is good or bad or even criminal. You know, because there are, you know, criminals out there. Or criminal activity,
yeah,
you know, fraud and things like that. So the lenders do have to be careful. I get that. So yeah, it's just frustrating. We've possibly got to tweak our model to allow for this issue. So I'm in the process of just going through that and trying to figure out, okay, how can we still have that production line? Still have the checks throughout the process rather than just letting an advisor go and get on with it.
Yeah.
Because we don't want people just to willy-nilly submit applications if, you know, they haven't got the right documents, it's not correct, if it's going to get declined. You know, when we submit a case, we are like 100% confident it's going to go through.
Right.
100%. We've done a huge amount of research up front. You know, we're 100%. Don't get me wrong, they don't all go through.
Mm.
You know, it might be because the client hasn't told us the truth.
Right.
You know, there's a credit issue or this debt that they didn't tell us about. Mm. It might not go through because there's a down valuation.
Yeah.
What can you do about that? It's things that are out of our control.
Yeah.
Sometimes, again, don't get me wrong, we're not perfect. We might make a human mistake in terms of our research, for example. Well, we'll just try and find another lender.
Mm.
So, but we've, interestingly enough, on our website, we're going to start publishing our success rates.
Nice.
Because I think no one does that.
Really?
No one does that. In terms of, and really sharing what the process is of getting a mortgage.
Right.
Because I think we are very proud of our success rates.
Mm.
And
I can see how that...
Oh, happy Easter, everybody! Screaming children.
Oh, God.
So I just need to tweak them all. But fundamentally, going back to the point of lead generation.
Yeah.
You know, I'm 100% interested in that. That's what the whole game's about.
Yeah,
the whole game about business is about getting clients.
Sure.
You know, and then doing a great service.
Yeah.
Looking after them, and developing that relationship and keeping that relationship. I think, in terms of expansion, as you're talking about, how you grow.
Mm.
That's something I'm exploring, but I need to just revisit our internal processes first. But we can sort of do it in conjunction. One thing I didn't talk about was the different model. I said the self-employed and the self-employed.
Yeah.
What you find in the... I just want to make this point because I think it's quite interesting and quite important. With a self-employed model for advisors, you have the firm, tier one, call it, which is like, the firm.
Yeah.
And then self-employed advisors all underneath in one tier.
Right.
So it's a very flat, one-layer tier.
Mm.
And I'm just exploring in my own mind of how we could create a better model for growth, for opportunity. Because you said to me, is there a model that you can copy? Mm. And that is the model. It's really simplistic. And it's not...
So the opportunity is making the model better.
I think definitely. And I think this is what's really interesting about our market is because it's full of 40-year-olds, I'm now 40. Alright. I was like making that that's really old.
You never know it.
Only just, alright? It's a dull industry full of dull people and they're all doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's a cottage industry, they're not good at marketing. For me, I'm just seeing this as a massive, huge opportunity to go and smash the competition and do something so much better to please so many more clients. And I think there genuinely is a huge opportunity out there. And maybe if we could work together, I'll be all over that because I think there's a huge opportunity out there to go and grab and do something so different to what everyone else is doing.
Yeah, especially when the normal model is so bad or it has obvious leaks.
It does have obvious leaks. And limitations. I don't want to go too much in terms of what I'm thinking right now because I do want to keep this a little bit under the radar.
Yeah.
I mean, I know there's only about 6 people listen to this. But
might be the one mortgage broker that wants to take it.
I do want to share it and I will share it. But I just want to model it in my own mind a bit more before I splurt it out.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's I don't really want to talk about things unless I know about it 100%.
Sure.
Because I don't really want to not have just gone through that proper due diligence process or thinking about it in detail.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's very easy just to dream about ideas.
Yeah.
And that's almost irrelevant. So I just need to model it a bit more. But you're right, there is an opportunity in terms of looking at the existing model.
Mm.
How can we make that model better in terms of better for clients?
Yeah.
And better for advisors as well.
Yeah.
Because it's quite limiting for advisors, I think, in terms of almost opportunities for them.
Yeah, sure.
But also, I think in terms of an industry, I think there's an opportunity to market ourselves better and differently and try and help more people. Because genuinely, for me, the biggest buzz I get out of anything is when we've done an amazing service for our clients. and whether that's helping a first time buyer get the keys to the first house. You know, for me, that's just like amazing. You know, and that's where I get, you know, you get a warm fuzzy glow.
Yeah.
That's my warm fuzzy glow.
Nice.
You know, and they don't have to be a first time buyer. They could be an investor, you know, buying a property or whatever. It's just, you know, when you just help people out, for me, that's what it's all about. But let's explore the whole idea of, how it could work. Because I think,
yeah,
I think it's probably a case of getting it down on paper and just sort of bouncing ideas. And
what's jumping into my mind is if you've got some semblance of a model that you're thinking about and still trying to clarify a little bit, but how do you see, do you think that kind of the process for bringing in clients is something that would be included in that model? Do you see that as like the process of bringing in clients?
I think it has to be.
What's like the, do you know what the like the ideal is for you? What outcome would you want from the process of generating leads and qualifying them and turning them into clients? Like what? It's probably a hard question to answer.
The outcome is in.
Maybe it's easier to go back a step. what's difficult about generating leads and clients at the moment? What are the things that you hate and you just want to get rid of? And if you could get rid of them, what would it look like in future if you had this like perfect process for bringing in clients?
Yeah, I guess you'd have maybe the first, assuming lots of inquiries come in.
Yeah.
The first headache would be filtering the general inquiries to begin with.
Right. Yeah.
And then once once somebody's ready to rock and roll, literally. An advisor can go and see them and just start that process, start actually doing stuff.
Yeah.
You know, actually, right, you want to do stuff? Right, let's go. Bang. Right, let's get this document, let's go through this. Boom, boom. We'll get you on that production line and we're going to get you to where you need to get to.
Nice.
So it's that first phase of, it's like flirting, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, it's a good analogy. It's like seeing a girl in a bar. And you're going to like have a chat and then maybe a week later you see her again, have another chat, maybe it's like let's get, are we going to do it or not?
Yeah, it's ring.
Yeah. So if we can get rid of the flirting and just get straight down to the marriage.
So you're just dealing with people that want to marry.
Or okay, it's maybe not marry, you could bring it back to say boyfriend, girlfriend, and then the flirting stage. So we get rid of the flirting, go straight to the boyfriend, girlfriend.
Yeah.
Or whichever way you want to look at it. But, you know, fundamentally, there's a lot of, you know, faffing around at the beginning.
Yeah.
Now, whether that is a case of, okay, we have a really strong foundation of email marketing, social media, retargeting, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Again, that might be a way to do it rather than manually having to phone people, because I think one thing I'm thinking about is whether people want to be phoned as much as they want these days, or whether maybe it'd be better. We've started to implement like a text service,
right?
So we're texting people.
Interesting. Yeah.
So I'm just thinking whether it'd be worth, or maybe combining it with a phone call as well. You know,
yeah.
I think the reality is you don't know how a client wants to be communicated with.
Yeah.
And I think. And the ridiculous thing is, a client might say, "Oh, I only want to be emailed."
Yeah.
And yet, the next week they go, "Oh, why didn't you call me?" This is what we've got to deal with.
Right.
And I'm being serious.
Yeah.
It happens all the time.
Rude. Interesting.
The client says, "Oh no, I'm not interested anymore. I don't need your help."
Okay.
Two months later, we're looking to do something. Can you help us?
Mm.
So, the reality is, clients lie all the time. And I don't mean in a nasty way.
No.
It's just...
People are complicated, don't
they? Yeah, people are very complex. So I think it's about how we deal with that flirting. So I'm just going through it in my mind. I think it's about communicating to them in lots of different formats. Email, text, social media. You can get these bots now that do things on the phones and with the tech, like instant messenger. I don't know. I think we need to almost prospect.
Yeah.
AI style.
So you're talking about automating the...
Automating the flirting.
Sales form. Flirting.
Automating the
relationship, I mean.
Yeah, automating the flirting.
Yeah.
Until human interaction is required.
Interesting. So that's a really good analogy, isn't it? Because that's what businesses do at that stage, is build relationships, isn't it? Not a personal relationship necessarily, and hold hands and kiss, but yeah.
So I think we just need to, I think that's a bit of the time consuming bit, because you know, when people want to get down to it, right, let's do it, that's fine. So I think it's a mixture of that bit plus finding those new inquiries or people wanting to do stuff now.
Okay.
And obviously when people want to do something now, you know, right, let's just do it.
So is that the dream? You just got people going, let's do business.
Yeah. Definitely. And that might come from them seeing us on a website and liking us, or maybe, you know, a client recommended us, you know, things like that. That's very powerful.
So do you have different kind of sources of inquiries at the moment?
Yeah, so we have introducers. So we've got like, I think the biggest accountancy practice in the Southwest,
right,
referring to us.
Mm, nice.
We've got online presence in terms of like a Google website and stuff like that.
Mm.
We've got obviously our social media side of things. Mm. Our social media's been around for a long time, but I've just started hammering it hard recently, and we've already seen results on that. So that's interesting. Well,
that's
that was, you know, one of them was professional rugby player Dan Thomas.
Yeah.
So we're helping him. He's a first time buyer, looking to buy his first place, and that was awesome. And we did a podcast session with him and video. That's, I need to get that on YouTube. I need to crack on with that. But yeah, so I think there's the lead sources come from all sorts, you know, existing clients, client referrals. You know, they tend to be the main ones. And then when you talk about digital side, you know, you've got other things like maybe Unbiased. It's a website called Unbiased. There's Vouchful. We never use Vouchful. I'm not massively keen on some of those platforms, if I'm honest.
Right.
You know, again, I'd rather have that direct connection with that client.
Yeah.
So I've got tons of more ideas in terms of strategies and ideas, and I think that'd be quite fun to explore those.
Yeah,
so maybe if you're up for that, we could.
Yeah,
we could look at that.
Awesome.
Awesome. Yeah. Cool. Does that sort of help?
Awesome. That helps a lot. Thank you very much.
Answer some of your questions.
It answers a lot of questions. Yeah. So it's a really good place to start, and I can just go and talk to some more people now. And
what's your plan in terms of? Sort of talking to more personas.
I was going to ask you off record, but I was going to ask if you know anybody in the potential industries that you might be able to.
Yeah.
Just give me the names.
No, I could give you an introduction.
Oh well, okay.
100%.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, very definitely.
I figured if I just go reaching out to solicitors firms, I might get shut down at the first phone call. So,
but you know what? Because
there are dodgy people out there.
it's challenging actually. To be able to sort of, you know, get in front of people. But I think, I'll happily give you some introductions. I know quite a few people.
Thank you.
It's a funny one with certain industries. I think different industries, even though the service industries, will be very different.
Right.
So I think, like, for example, the difference between our industry and solicitor, you know, law industry. Let's talk about conveyancing.
Yeah.
It is, somebody could buy a house with no mortgage. But a solicitor still needs to be involved.
Interesting, yeah.
Somebody
so they capture more of the market.
Yeah.
Right.
Somebody could get, if they need a mortgage, they could get a mortgage direct with a bank.
Hmm.
But they still need a solicitor.
Yeah.
So, any house transaction, you know, a conveyancer will be required.
Right.
So they've almost got a monopoly of house transactions, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sure.
You know, whereas our industry, people still can buy a house, but they don't necessarily need us.
Right.
So it'd be nice if they did.
But sure, makes sense to most of the time.
But you know, you can see straight away there's a difference in terms of our industries, even though we're in the service industry.
Absolutely.
But again, you know, obviously lawyers and you know, they do all sorts of different things. So again, each element of what they do may need a different tact.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's
absolutely
challenging potentially.
Yeah, I think probably, I don't know what you think about this, but my instinct is that I'll probably need, wherever I find the most kind of motivation and interest, I probably need to focus on that.
Yeah.
That industry, and maybe even a particular service, like you said.
Yeah.
Depending on how many of those people there are.
Yeah.
Just so that I can get really good at that.
I think accountants would probably be a little bit more like us.
Right.
Because effectively, you can either, you don't have to use an accountant, because you can do it yourself. So like us, and you can buy a house without using us.
Yeah.
But some people do choose to use an accountant.
Mm.
So it's either, so it's similar in that sense.
Yeah.
And it's, I know they have different, I guess, offerings within different practices, maybe a bit of, you know, expertise here, expertise there. But I think it's less obvious. When you look at a law, you've got, you know, all sorts, you know, you've got conveyancing, you've got family, which might be, you know, divorce and stuff like that. So it's very, very different. You know, very different.
Yeah.
So
I can see that.
You know, sure. And then you've got residential and commercial property, you know, conveyancing. You've got all sorts, you know, you've got litigation, you know, it's all, you know, criminal. I mean, there's just so many.
Yeah.
So it's
it's funny, isn't it? Because you could, you know, looking from the outside in, you might think, oh, he's thinking about just helping professional service firms, but actually, like you just said, that's huge.
Oh,
a huge variety of
yeah.
potential services and solutions to problems, isn't it?
No, definitely. Definitely.
So,
yeah, no, definitely. I'll give you some names. I'll even introduce you directly. I'll reach out to them first and say, would you be interested? And then if they are, I'll say, right, they get in touch. So it makes it a little bit easier, a bit warmer. But mate, if you've got time, let's dive into some stuff and actually.
Yeah. What now?
Yeah. Have you got time?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah,
cool.
I might have to go to the toilet first then.
Yeah, yeah. I think I.
Too much coffee.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey podcast peeps, listen, thank you so much for listening to the Ben Parry podcast experience. It means the world to me for you guys to listen, and I hope you got some real value out of it. If you can rate and review this podcast, it will mean the world to me as well. And listen, I really hope that you can keep tuned in and listen out for much more to come. So yeah, big love and catch up soon, guys.